Welcome back, guys. DGS on 104.1 FM KMOX. So anyone around my age is going to remember Bree Smith very well. She was a meteorologist here in town, and when she was here, she was a good friend of the show and made many appearances. And since leaving St. Louis, she's been through a very difficult, very harrowing experience. I saw the national package that they did on Bree and reached out to her, and she's been kind enough to spend a few moments with us. So for anyone out there who worries about deepfakes or revenge porn or your daughters or your mothers or whatever, pay special attention to this. Bree, it's so good to talk to you again, my friend.
Thank you for having me. It's good to talk to you, too.
Of course. So I'm just going to turn this over to you. You tell us your story, and we'll jump in if we need to.
It's a wild story. So, you know, I've been living and working in Nashville for the last 9 years. And much like I was in St. Louis on the air. And last fall, I got an email from a viewer that said, Bree, I've been contacted by someone that I think is impersonating or pretending to be you. I don't think it's you, but I'm not sure how to tell. And I wrote him back and I said, well, I can assure you it wasn't me because I didn't know the person and I'd never messaged them. And he wrote me again and said, well, I just want you to know, I think it might be your husband, because they had pictures that only a husband would have.
Oh, my.
And I wrote him back and I said, well, I can assure you it's not my husband because pictures don't exist. That would be compromising. And if they did, my husband would never share them. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm so sorry you got contacted by an imposter. Please report and block it. And then he wrote me a third and final time and said, you know, I just want you to see the chat that I had. And it included screen grabs with someone that was pretending to be me, that had turned very disturbing and very intimate in nature, that was promising an interaction at a hotel downtown and was asking that person to send money to pay for it. And when that happened, I went to my employers at the time and they said, there's nothing that can be done. It's not illegal to do that. That someone can use AI technology, take your face, digitally alter it and make it look like you are in some state of undress or in any environment. I mean, they can really just take your face, your voice, your likeness and distort it in a way that you have no consent, no control over, and no recourse to fight back. And over the last 6 months, I've been fighting that, successfully able to pass some legislation here in Tennessee, but it's also really opened my eyes to the scope of what unchecked AI is. You know, my father-in-law was visiting last weekend and he flat out asked me, he said, what's a deep fake? You know, there's a lack of just kind of an understanding of conceptually of what these things are. And if we don't understand it, we can't combat it and we certainly can't control it.
Bree, what does the new law in Tennessee do? How does it help?
So it makes, you know, in my specific instance, last fall, someone created two intimate images that put my face on someone else's semi-nude body. They also took a video off of my social media and distorted it to make it look like I was saying things that I was not saying to prove my identity. So this specific bill speaks to that kind of abuse, that it is now illegal to take someone's face, use a computer, use artificial intelligence, and create intimate images or video of them and distribute it without their consent. Which is, it's a duh. I mean, like, the fact that wasn't illegal, it's like, what do you mean? And what was so disturbing to me last fall wasn't just my experience, but it wasn't illegal for someone to do that to a minor.
Oh.
Like, really, really a huge concern. And as a mom, you know, my oldest is now 11 years old. I had him in St. Louis. My youngest is 7. It's like, if I can't protect this from happening to me, then how am I going to protect them? And you know, it flew through the legislature here, not a bipartisan issue, definitely a, you know, a policy and a person issue. Everybody can agree. You can't do that. I mean, it is just such an extreme form of bullying that has such damaging impacts on a person.
No, we all of us Americans and all of us certainly in the media are big supporters of the First Amendment. This is not that. This is not that. This is an easy call, as you say.
You know, and I'm glad you said that, because what I have grown to learn, because I knew nothing about this prior to it happening, and imposters continue to come up, and they have a variety of strategies to try to lure other people into sharing personal information and money. So while it was a violation for me, it's also a safety hazard for people who get tricked into private conversations with someone that they think they know or someone that they think they trust. You know, just like you are a recognizable name and face, and if someone gets a message from you, it doesn't have the same stranger danger quality as some random cold call Joe Schmo person you've never heard of. I have had over the last 6 months, I've had people get tricked into interacting with accounts that are pretending to be me, either with pictures they've stolen from me or pictures that they've distorted with AI. I've had accounts pretend to be fan accounts that are creating user fan experiences. All of them, at the end of the messaging, I mean, yes, it's humiliating for me. It's embarrassing. It's very violating. But they're asking these people for money. I mean, I know one person who interacted with one of these imposters a week and a half ago, and that imposter said, "You've won a top fan award, and Bree's going to come to your house. We just need you to send us $300. And for Bree's safety purposes, we need a copy of your passport. And we need your home address so we can do a background check." And it's like, you get people that think, "Oh, well, I know Bree. I trust her. Sure, this, of course she needs safety." And it's like they're using AI at its core into this really most kind of elevated level of identity theft.
Rachel, you know, question for Bree?
Yeah, I don't really have a question. I just want to say, Bree, thank you for speaking up about this. You know, you mentioned it's embarrassing for you. I can't even imagine. And I can't imagine how many people this has happened to. And they're just like, "I just want it to go away. I don't want anyone else to notice." But thank you for using your voice and your platform to speak up and actually get something done about this. That is incredible.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. You know, since I testified for the House, a handful of people that work in like digital identity security have come forward. And I was talking to one of them last week, and she said, she's like, "I think we could probably help you and shut these accounts down, but it's going to be like whack-a-mole because they just pop up so frequently." And I told her, I said, "I appreciate that. I mean, I do want to help my own circumstance, but if I don't, like, we have to do something about this because it can happen to anybody. And if I get some special help that just helps me, the bully's just going to pick somebody else."
Yeah.
Like, what we have to do is we have to understand what it is. And, you know, this law that's been passed in Tennessee is great, but we're still really behind.
Yeah.
And we're still in a reactive place where it's like, "Oh, well, you know, someone used technology this way. Okay, well, then we'll make a law." And it's like, we need to not just match it, but we need to get ahead of it. Where, you know, we're setting the boundaries. We're setting the expectations. We're equipping people with the tools to fight it. You know, what happened to me, I didn't even know what to call it. Like, I went to Google. I had to, like, what is this called? Like, what do I do if someone uses AI to distort my face and my voice? And it's like, you know, we have to have more resources out there, because I was just swimming in a sea of confusion and shock for so long. And, you know, when it happens to you, you're also struggling with you know, the effects of being victimized. Mm-hmm. And so, just like you said, I didn't want to see these things, but it's like, if I just stuck my head in the ground like an ostrich, it certainly wasn't going to make them go away.
Guys, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Bree Smith, who you will remember being a meteorologist here in town and a friend of the DGS, and went through something terrible with someone using AI images of her and sexualizing them. Kev, you have a question for Bree?
I'm just curious, Bree, if anybody that you've spoken with could give a reason why we're so far behind. Because we've been talking about these issues on this show for several years. And if we've been talking about it for several years, that means people in the real tech world have known about them longer than that.
I agree with you. And no one has given me an answer. I still don't know who's behind mine, who or what or whom. Maybe there's multiple. The way that the strategies have changed. You know, I think that we have to start asking hard questions to Meta and to, you know, X and to all of these social media accounts of, like, what are you doing to identify these fake accounts, these imposter accounts, the handful of people that I've spoken that work in you know, digital identity security. It is kind of an emerging industry that was initially really tailored towards musicians and actors, especially for musicians. And when you think about legally what we can do, the only real framework that's been in place is copyrights. You know, musicians have been able to, you know, request takedowns if an album is leaked early, or if a song has been released, or if a song sounds too much like a previous song, you know, if there's been some, if they've been riffed off of. But what we really have to catch up to now is that, you know, my identity is my body of work. And we don't have the legal protocol in place, both locally, nationally, or even internationally, because some of these scams originate overseas, to protect really what makes a person. Like, you know, I think when AI first came on the scene, I know for me it was, you know, it was this sort of idealized robotic human-esque thing, you know, that wasn't human, but kind of looked a little human, or it was like so extremely attractive and beautiful and perfectly like filtered out. And then we saw it being used fairly commonly with like celebrities, big celebrities. But the concept now that they would take everyday humans, and I've seen this happen for people that work in news, broadcast, or maybe have some kind of recognition in their community, but just any old person, that they're just going to take all of the pictures off of your website. They're going to make a new profile with a new name, and they're going to prey on the people that follow you and trust you. You know, in my instance, often these imposters or these spammers will reply to people on comments on my page, but they have started direct messaging people who follow me, and I can't intercept that.
Yeah.
And so they're finding a way in. They're finding kind of a crack in people's trust and resolve. And it's compromising those people. And it's also making it like, how do we verify now? Like, I'm 100% human.
Right.
This me is me. And that's so important, just how we live our lives and how we trust people in the community that especially are there to keep us safe.
Well, Bree,
you know, folks know me as their meteorologist.
We're so sorry that this happened to you. And let me echo what Rachel said. And thank you on behalf of my 20-year-old daughter, who I would die if this happened to. Just thank you for standing up, and thank you for the work you've done in Tennessee, and hopefully it'll catch on here in Missouri.
Yeah, I'm going to keep tearing after it. I want to create the resource that I wish I had had last fall.
Good for you.
To help other people. So we're going to, you know, it's a long road, but I'm committed to fighting it.
Thank you, Bree. Good luck. We appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Thank you. Love you guys. Inside, it's such a
feeling that my... GS222. So what do you guys think about Donald Trump getting a new plane? I believe it's the country of Qatar is gifting Donald Trump with a $400 million 747, which he plans to retrofit to become the new Air Force One, fly for the next 3 years, and then take it with him and put it at his presidential library. There's something called the Emoluments Clause, which basically covers this, so that high-ranking officials, certainly the chief executive, cannot take gifts from foreign countries and foreign forces and become affected by that in any way. There's no doubt to me that if a sitting president was offered an 80-inch big screen and television or a Corvette, that they couldn't and wouldn't take it. So the fact that it's so huge and giant is kind of allowing the president to kind of hide behind it. And you saw his Truth Social post where he's like, these idiot SOB Democrats, they want to look a gift horse in the mouth and it's for free and they want to pay full price for it. They're so stupid. But he's once again kind of missing the larger point.
Yeah, on purpose, because he knows what benefits him.
Well, I thought that there was like, because I remember somebody was gifted, it might have been Trump himself, it might have been like Obama or Biden. Somebody was gifted like a very nice pen by another country, maybe Japan, and like they basically held it and was like, wow, and then somebody walked up and like snatched it out of his hands. And
yes, and then they
I think it was
things.
You who would who explained it. Like, I was like, what was that? And I think you explained like, oh no, you can't take anything if you're the president. Any gift that's given to you by another country basically just gets taken and put in a museum or whatever, and you can't actually make any use of it. So I don't see how it could even be that he's like retrofitting it to be Air Force One or whatever. Yeah. Like it just seems like they would immediately either decline it or be like, thank you.
Eventually he does it.
If it's gonna remain Air Force One past his presidency, all right. I mean, I that's fine, right? Why does it have to go to his library that he can then use it? Like, that's a personal gift. If it's just a gift because we're friends of the United States, then it should remain Air Force One beyond his presidency. And then I think there's a lot less controversy there, right? I mean,
we can
still talk about whether it's okay that we want the plane that is being flown with the president of the United States on it, the mobile command, if something really goes wrong, to be given to us by a foreign power, even if it's a foreign power that you're friendly with. Because I saw one guy break this down. He's like, look, man, the Air Force is going to have to strip that thing bare to make sure there's no surveillance, to make sure there are no listening devices. You're going to have to get it all the way down to the bare bones. And then you've got to retrofit it. You think that's going to be cost-free to do all of that? Again, if it's like this is the permanent new Air Force One for every president to come for the next 10 years, 20 years, whatever, I don't really get bothered by that, but it shouldn't be going anywhere but to government service if this is what it is.
What is the reason that they're giving the plane or the jet? The reason given?
I think just, hey, buddy, here you go. We're good friends.
I mean, come on. What are we doing? Like, why is it not okay to receive a pen, but because this is so much bigger that somehow makes it, like, easier to swallow? It makes absolutely no sense.
I think Wheels nailed it. He wants it.
Yeah.
Like a little kid.
Well, and this is all part of that disturbing pattern we talked about earlier. It's not even the individual things. Like, I don't care if he gets a plane, but like, this is a guy that just is going to do what he wants and then see if somebody can check him as you go. And nobody has shown that they're willing to check this. Nobody has been willing to do the thing. And I mean the people around him too, right? Like, people around him should be like, sir, this is not right. This is, you know, you're already wealthy. You don't need this, you know, like, but nobody will say that to him because he's like, you're fired. I don't understand why it's got to be a constant pushing of the boundary. I do understand. Ask yourself a question. What's the benefit or what's the purpose of constantly pushing the boundaries of what you can and can't do? Mm-hmm. What's the purpose of seeing how far you can go?
I don't know. I mean, you gotta tell me.
I mean, there's one.
He's
one
doing it again.
One is you get to go further because if nobody's going to stop me here, well, then I'm just going to keep on going. And another is to just keep on consolidating things to the point where, like, how did we get to this point where the president just does whatever he wants? Well, you let it go every little step of the way.
Back to your original point a few segments ago. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX, 1041 FM, KMOX. Time to talk to the great Bernie Miklas. Hello, Bern.
What's going on this pleasant Monday? Everybody good?
Yeah, I think everyone seems pretty good. Good mood. Wheels had a great weekend, as always. So as long as that happens, we're all fine.
I mean, what's bad about watching baseball and playing video games, Bern?
I can go along with that, except I would substitute playing music rather than playing video games. But that, to each his own, you know? It's all good.
Now, you mean
records or like playing an instrument?
Oh, no. I wish I could play an instrument. I used to play the drums, but I wouldn't even remember how to hold the drumsticks at this point. But I like a whole wide, wide range of music. So whatever I'm in the mood for, I pop it on.
Dude.
Blast it out in my office and... You know, I don't get up and dance, but I'm close.
You need to do what I did when I was in junior high. You need to come to Casa Glover. I have 3 drum sets, and we'll put on the headphones, and we'll jam out and pretend we're Neil Peart.
You could give him lessons.
That
music and fighting lessons.
Tap dance, karate?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you never know, man. I mean, you and I live pretty close to each other. So
you can make this happen.
I might wander up there one of these times.
So we all played baseball, certainly enough to know what a losing streak feels like and a winning streak feels like. And one of the most interesting things to me, in sort of almost a paranormal kind of way, is momentum. And we've all felt it against us. We've all felt it at our back. And right now the Cardinals have it at their back, and I hope they make something out of it.
Oh, I've really enjoyed watching them. I mean, the club's been good in every area. I mean, the base running could be a little better, but that's not a huge deal. They're pitching great, both bullpen after they've reordered that, repurposed that. Bullpen's pitching great. Starting pitching's been really, really good. The offense continues to be a 10 offense. I'm not sure why that doesn't get enough attention. They factually are a top 10 offense in the majors. And I think Ollie Marmol and the players, they've got a good energy going, they clearly like playing for him. I think the culture is good. Now, the problem with this is they're just going to have to prove it. They're going to have to prove it over and over and over and over again, because the Cardinals last year, after a bad start, take off and go on a 33-18 streak. And they looked great for 51 games, and then they kind of stalled out. So that's the test of baseball. I mean, it's the great thing about baseball, and it's a burden to baseball teams. You got to prove it over once to two. But I like what we're seeing so far.
Bern, I would say I think people are probably a little bit less excited about the offense than they should be, because you're right, they're top 10
by
almost all of the measures. But you think it's because they just don't hit a lot of home runs?
I kind of think so, and I love the irony in that, because I hear a lot of, this for years, I hear a lot of complaints about, I don't like all these home runs. I don't want all this emphasis on home runs, trying to hit home runs all the damn time. I hear that a lot, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, to those folks, the fact that the Cardinals are averaging two doubles a game, they're tied for first in doubles. The fact that they're on their way to their best season of hitting doubles since 2013, doubles are really, really, really good, and they'll score a lot of runs for you. So, I hear somebody tell me one more time, well, they don't slug much. Well, you're talking home runs. You're not including doubles and triples. So, no, there's more to this offense than people assume.
Now, put me in the category that wants more home runs, but I think you're going to get them. You're going to get them now that Contreras is back on track. Right. You're going to get them, I think, eventually from somebody in the Gorman-Burleson group. You're going to get them from Herrera now that he's back from the injured list. But what I find really interesting, tying into what you're talking about, the people that have always been mad about the selling out for home runs approach and hating that should love this team. There are only 7 teams in baseball that strike out below 20% of the time, and the Cardinals are one of those 7.
And they've also improved their walk. Also improved their walk rate.
So they're and Victor Scott's running at will. Now others should be running more. I'd like to see Mason Winn run a bit more. 2 steals for him should be triple that by now.
He's not good at it though.
Yeah, I know. He needs to get better at it, because it's a tool for him, and that would be amazing to add to it. It's just fascinating that they're doing it in a different way. I do think they need to hit home runs at some point, but I don't think you need to force the issue, as they're proving right now.
I think they're doing fine. I mean, they're home. The other thing about this, I always look at things in an abstract way. If you don't have a team that is pounding a lot of home runs, and I mean, I think the Cardinals are okay. It's not like they don't hit any home runs. And during this stretch they've been on, like where they're 12-4 since April 25th, or 10-2 since April 30th, they've hit a really good share of home runs. But what I look at too, if your own team doesn't hit a ton of homers, one way you can neutralize the potential disadvantage is you hold the other you hold the other team to fewer home runs, and that's what the Cardinals are doing. Their staff's got one of the lowest home run rates allowed in Major League Baseball, so the Cardinals are winning the home run derby, so to speak.
Yeah,
because they're not letting the other side hit many.
I have a question, and it's a bit of a 101 question, but I think we can elevate it. So when I played ball, I could tell the difference between a fastball and a curveball. And here's how. When I swung and missed at a fastball, I realized, oh, crap, that was a curveball. I couldn't see the spin. I couldn't see jack crap. I just thought it was a fastball, and it wasn't. Is that typical to big leaguers? Like, the guys, the pitchers have such good stuff that they're swinging what they think are fastballs, or when, like, Gorman or Walker chase something that they can't do anything with, are they chasing it knowing it's probably a cutter or a sinker?
I don't know. That's a tough one to answer. I think there's such a variety of pitches now. The sweeper is new. The cutter is more prominent than it's ever been. And I think when it comes out of a hand, it might look like something that they're expecting. And they don't even have, they can't even blink before the pitch is there. So if they guess wrong, they're going to oftentimes look silly. But I know Wheeler will have something to say about that, and I hope he does.
Yeah, the problem is it's not. There's no one thing, right? So some pitchers, it all depends on the quality of the pitcher and the kind of stuff. But there are pitchers where you can't tell the difference. At the release, the pitches look the same. Right. The changeup, the slider, the fastball, they're all going to look the same until they're about two-thirds of the way down the path to home. And by then, it's too late. You've decided to swing or take, and if you're wrong, you're wrong. There are others where there's a giveaway where you can see the curveball at the release point. But with the way pitches are crafted now with using computers and technology and these pitching labs that we've been talking about, the Cardinals building here for a while, that's becoming less and less true for the best of the best.
So not to be silly, but hitters in the 70s had an easier time seeing the tells.
I would say so, yeah. Not everybody, because there were pitchers that naturally could tunnel their pitches. But we didn't even know what that was then, and we didn't have the same idea of what it was. But you have that dynamic, right? And then you throw in like the prevalence of split fingers now. They've come in because they look exactly like a fastball, except they're not a fastball. So if a pitcher can throw a fastball on the bottom rail knee high and then throw the splitter off of that, you think it's the fastball, and all of a sudden it's not there anymore. Those are the things that are making it difficult. But the way you combat that, you have to change every at bat. This is where younger guys get into trouble, is mm-hmm. they don't have the ease of the adaptability to say, okay, they're killing me here. So you change instead of looking for pitches and trying to recognize, you look for location instead. So you're like, all right, anything low and away, I'm just not going for it until I have to, because I can't hit it and it's hard to see. I'm going to look middle, or I'm going to look up. When you get a sinker ball pitcher, you want to get him up in the zone. So none of it's easy, none of it's automatic, but there are a lot of ways to try to combat that if you can.
That answers my question really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was a hell of a baseball clinic there.
Yeah.
Can we talk? I had a question. This might be juicier. What do you guys think? Are Cardinals fans going to respond to this team by buying more tickets, or has too much damage been done?
I would say yes, but it's got to go on for a little longer to convince people, right? If this is the team, if you're within a game or two of first place at the end of May going into June, I think you will start seeing bigger crowds.
Agreed.
Yeah, not a lot at first, gradual, because you hear from the same people I do. There are the angries that are never going to be not angry unless you're in first place by five games in August. And even then, they're going to be like, they should have done something else.
I predict that if we're contending for first in the division when the kids are out of school, like Memorial Day, I think we'll see people coming back in noticeable amounts.
Yeah.
But I think that if we give this away and we're three or four under by that time, I think we're going to see the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the style of play that they have, the energy, the enthusiasm, they're very entertaining. Victor Scott's worth the price of admission, as they say. People are just going to love Ivan Herrera as this continues. Contreras is killing the ball. There's a lot of positives and a lot of positive energy. So I think that's the kind of thing that draws people back. But they got a lot of haters. And, the weird thing about an 8-game winning streak and 10-2, best record in baseball since April 30th, it actually makes some people in the fan base unhappy, because they're the people that predicted, oh, they're going to lose 110 games,
Yeah.
But they'll have to get over that. I think I always thought it was going to be a better team than that, but they still have, the Cardinals still have a lot to prove. But my whole thing is, if you really are a Cardinals fan, if you really, really are, try to enjoy the success.
Let me ask you guys this. We all know that radio isn't quite what it used to be, and we're all still here kicking and doing our best, but it's not like it was a decade or two ago. Is it possible that maybe going to a game, because I don't know what the attendance numbers are like across the board in the MLB, but maybe it used to be in your top three choices, maybe now it's not?
I think generationally it's definitely changed, and I think it continues to change, and I think that's a problem for the Cardinals, because this has been an old school, old style baseball market, and a lot of people were raised on baseball played a certain way, and there's so many other things to do with your time. You can stream anything you want. You got any kind of movie you want to see. It's your fingertips and right on down the line. So I think the Cardinals have a real challenge in terms of generationally of sort of restoring what had been in place for a long time as far as ticket sales and people at the ballpark.
It all of it is interesting to me. Like baseball right now is not far off of the pace that it was attendance wise, the sport as a whole, the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So last 2 years, the average game was about 29,000 fans across Major League Baseball. Right now it's 27, but we haven't gotten to the big months yet. June, July, August, September are the biggest attendance months. April's usually one of the slowest, except for the opening week with home openers and things like that. May usually builds a little bit. So it's tracking to be similar to the last 2 years, which were back to where you were 10 years ago. You know, because it was about that 29,000-30,000 fans a game from 2004 until just about COVID.
Yeah, I get you, but I'm talking specifically about the Cardinals. I think it's a pretty unique fan base with a unique history, and it's when the magic's gone and people find that there are other things to do, and a lot of your fans that were along for the ride from the 80s, you know, up through the end of TLR and even past that, I mean, they're maybe much older, maybe they've lost interest, maybe some of them have, you know, passed away. And I don't know that the Cardinals are going to have to do something really special to sort of replicate that by attracting younger fans. I don't really care about baseball in general. I care about what are the Cardinals ever going to get back to how they had it?
Yeah,
that's my concern. Baseball will take care of itself.
It's a good concern. You know, just look. And now this is all based on tickets sold, not people in seats. But in 2023, the Cardinals averaged 40,000 tickets a game. Last year was 35. Right now it's 28.5.
Wow.
Now that's sold. That's not butts in seats, but tickets sold matters.
Sure does.
It does look bad when there's not 28 there, but they're selling 20. Yeah. That's a pretty big change. And Bernie's right. It might take something kind of big to get that going back the other way.
Welcome back, DGS 252. So, Rach, at the Kentucky Derby, you can have a big hat, but not big boobs hanging out.
Yeah, they actually went and changed the dress code for the Kentucky Derby because there was an influencer who showed up and she had very large boobs and she was showing them off. And I guess that's kind of a no-no in like Southern culture.
Showing them? Or just lots of cleavage?
Lots of cleavage. Okay. They weren't like, she wasn't freeing the nipple there, anything like that. No, she just had a ton of cleavage and was, you know, posting photos to Instagram.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of not how people dress at the Kentucky Derby. I'm not interested in the Kentucky Derby myself, but apparently it's like a Southern thing. You're just a little more ladylike.
Genteel.
Covered up. And people were complaining, but then people were like, well, that's just her body. You know, that's how she looks. I will say she did definitely select a dress that accentuated her figure. I don't hold her figure against her, but it's like she was wearing like a very low cut dress. Well, the Kentucky Derby has now come out and said, like, yeah, if you're going to be in these certain sections, like, you need to just be a little more covered.
So there's a boob section.
if you're going to be with, like, the civilized crowd.
Well, I think it's like certain areas, certain bars, like different boxes that you're able to enter into. They just want you more.
Want to keep it classy.
Yeah. So I just thought it was funny. Like the power of one influencer's boobs has completely changed the rules.
How about it?
Yeah.
Section B, seat 00. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's where they put her.
Took Wheeler a second.
008.
There we go.
But it's just funny the way people argue about these things online. Like, she should be able to show whatever she wants. It's her body. And then, like, it is so improper. Never do. It's like, I can't imagine caring. Like, I can imagine being at the event and being like, wow, she's got a low cut top on. And then moving on with my day. It's not the end of the world.
Which is what I would do, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think this is an old fart thing, but I mean, people, you don't just get to decide what's okay. You're like, no, whatever you want is okay. That's never been the way. It's never going to be the way.
Yeah, but a lot of people think that's the way life works. Like, that's kind of how a lot of people have been raised. Like, you know what? Whatever feels good, as long as you're happy,
sure. So what if a guy shows up to work in a Speedo? Is that going to be okay? Because I'm going to tell you, it's not.
I'm going to tell you it is.
That's just the way his body looks in that Speedo.
Yeah, if agree you to disagree.
He just wants to express himself. It's just who he is.
He's in Section D.